On the move for everything interesting, informative, even dramatic. And dramatic is precisely the adjective for what you'll hear in just a few minutes. 20-year-old John Bagwell of Ardmore, Oklahoma, a U.S. soldier in Vietnam, describes 1 week of terror in the city of Hue. He was wounded, but finally shot and crawled his way to freedom. Hear this heroic survivor of the Battle of Hue tell his own incredible escape story in just 3 minutes. First, some Monitor music, courtesy of The Seekers.
Love is kind, love is wise, so much laughter in your eyes, and you know that I will love you till the last flower dies.
Do you hear music far away? There's so much I'd like to say. Got a feeling also new, so I'm singing just for you.
Today in Vietnam, the city of Hue is no longer a battleground. After almost a month of constant fighting, North Vietnamese forces have finally been driven from the city limits. U.S. Marines mopped up final pockets of resistance yesterday, and American forces engaged the enemy today 3 miles outside the city. Only several days ago, however, fighting inside the city was fierce, with heavy casualties on both sides. One man who died was a civilian, Courtney Niles of NBC News International. A heroic 20-year-old U.S. soldier, John Bagwell of Ardmore, Oklahoma, was trapped with Niles in a house, but finally escaped through a set of circumstances just short of miraculous. He tells his dramatic escape story to David Burrington of NBC News.
So how did you finally get out of there?
Well, it was the next morning. They finally started attacking at 5:30, and by 9 o'clock they had the house completely torn down, really. The roof was coming off. We figured the only way we could get out was to run out the front door, to get a good look at our enemy, because they had been up against the side of the house, and we could not really see them to shoot at them. So we thought that when a grenade would go off at the back door or something, we would run out the front door. As the civilian was with me, Courtney Niles was the first one to go. As a grenade went off, it sort of caught us by surprise. We were waiting for one, and then all of a sudden it went off, so he ran first. I paused a second, looked back, and looked into blank faces. I said, are we going? And I had no answer, so I ran myself. I cut.
The firing, by the way, as he went out the door, did they start shooting at him right away?
Yes, they did. They shot at him. I didn't think he'd been hit. So I, of course, ran. I cut loose on automatic and jumped behind the pickup truck, which was parked in the front of the house. I realized I didn't have time enough to reload again, so I ran across the road and got to the rice paddy. By this time, they must have thrown a grenade at the front door to keep anybody else from coming out. Couldn't really say for sure because nobody followed me at that particular moment. So it was at this time that Courtney turned around, and he asked me if I'd been shot. I told him no, and I noticed he was bleeding his right leg and his left arm. So we were receiving sniper fire from other buildings real quick. So I got him down to the side, took off his belt, put around his leg, took off my belt, put it around his arm, applied a tourniquet, and stopped the bleeding. We were still under enemy fire all this time, so I got him around to a little corner of the rice paddy, treated him for shock for 5 minutes or so, and then we got up and we decided we were going to have to make a run somewhere. I'd been only in the city a day and a half. I didn't know which way to go, and so we started up the road. He was walking pretty good. I was scared, and of course I was running as fast as I could. We got up to a corner and we saw two NVA run across the road, so we quickly cut to the right, and I noticed a bunch of dead Vietnamese along the road, and so I realized there would probably be some sniper fire there, but we kept going. About this time, the two NVA that we watched go across the road opened up, and I turned around, and they had shot Courtney, and I saw him fall to the ground. So I kept on running, still thinking that I could get help. And, of course, I was praying every second of that I was running. And as I turned around the corner, I received more sniper fire, so I kept on running. And it was about the second to the last bullet that went through the back of my little toe on my left foot. And the main thing that, of course, scared me, I looked down and I saw a hole in my boot. And my heart just fell all the way down to my foot. And so I kept on running, and out of nowhere, right to the right, there was a church, a Catholic church. So I ran in there. The Vietnamese father said that he would help me. He gave me a little patch on the foot, and he wrapped my face up in bandage, took me upstairs, and hid me as a Vietnamese in case the Viet Cong came. There was a bunch of refugees there. I understand there were several thousand in that church. So the possibility that there might be a Viet Cong in there was quite probable. So he didn't want it to be known amongst too many people that I was there. So he hid me there for 2 days. All this time I kept thinking if I could get back to the house, I could still save somebody and get to proper military authorities. So at 12:30 one night, I started crawling.
Well, why did you leave? Why didn't you just stay in that church?
Well, the father told me that the Viet Cong might come that night, and he was quite sure that if the Viet Cong did come, they would certainly kill him and kill me both. And I thought that the father was nice enough to save my life that I had no right to put his life in any further danger. He had already taken all my military clothing, buried them out back, and given me some civilian clothing. So I had on black pants and a black overcoat and white shirt. So I looked like a regular civilian. So I started crawling across the rice paddy at something like 12:30, and at 4 o'clock, I arrived just outside of the American Army signal site. And my main thought then, after getting this mile and a half or 2 miles that I've crawled without receiving any more fire from the enemy, my main thought then was, of course, that the Americans might think that I was an NVA or VC, and they might, of course, try to shoot me. So I waited until shortly before dawn, and I pulled off my white shirt, jumped up, and shouted, "I'm an American." And they, of course, shot at me but didn't hit me. And then once they found out I was an American, they took me inside, and I was able to call the Military Assistance Command, the main military headquarters there in Way, and they were quite surprised that anybody from the television station had lived through it. This was, of course, 4 days after I had made the run out of the house, and about a week and several days after the entire attack on the city. So they had not heard from us. We had no communication during the entire time, so I'm sure they were quite surprised that I showed up.
How did you feel when you were back in friendly territory?
Well, it was great to see Americans. I had been told they were Marines, and so when I ran up, I said, "Are you Marines?" And they says, "No, we're Army." And, of course, that was even better since I'm Army.
John, you're a lucky man.
Yes, I am.
We've been speaking with Specialist 4 John Bagwell, who survived a week under the nose of the North Vietnamese in Hue, South Vietnam. This is David Burrington, NBC News in Vietnam, now back to monitor in New York.
Has this ever happened to you? You're driving along, and then the monotony of driving gets you down. You're droopy. You've got the driving drowsies, and that could be dangerous. Well, fight back. Pull over and take no-doze. It's got the strongest stimulant you can buy without a prescription, and it's not habit-forming. No-doze. No car should be without it. Al Capp goes to college. The not-so-elusive Al Capp, creator of Lil Abner and also Monitor's expert on nothing with opinions on everything, spoke last week at the University of Miami. Here's how he answered some of the questions from the student body.
Mr. Capp, there have been several women on the political scene or on the national scene in the United States, and I'd like to ask you about two of them. First, what do you think of Shirley Temple and her race in California?
What I think of Shirley Temple, I never dreamed when I used to see her in those little pictures that she'd want to bomb my farm. Never. Showed nothing of that. But I will give you some news I got just coming driving last night, and I got it on the air. I hate to think it's true, and that is that Lee Bouvier, her Princess Radziwill, Jackie Kennedy's sister, Lee Bouvier is giving up her acting career. I hate to bring you this news. I don't know if the public will accept this. I don't think it will.
Could you tell us what social ills we can see being pleaked in Little Abner in the forthcoming months?
What social ills will be treated in Little Abner? All social ills. This is, where else will you find any solution for them? I mean, certainly not in Phoenix. It's too full of sex and violence. Let me answer one question that was asked me a half a dozen times here in one way or another, and that is, do I have any secret pitch in Lil Abner? Do I insert anything into the strip that underneath what I seem to be doing? And the answer is that I am guilty of just such sneakings. I do sneak things in. So I have a pitch, and I'll sneak it in any time I get a chance. Now, to tell you what it is, I must tell you that I was born in New Haven, Connecticut, on a street called Stephen Street. Now, Stephen Street wasn't the most undesirable street in New Haven. It was simply the least desirable street in the most undesirable area of the town. But it wasn't one of these hopelessly submerged streets. Stephen Street aspired to become a slum. Now, there were some differences between us on Stephen Street, but we all had one great bond in common, and that was to get out of Stephen Street. Now, there were some differences between us. For instance, we Kaplan boys, Kaplan was my maiden name, we Kaplan boys noticed that the Hogan kids upstairs went to synagogue one day late. We noticed that. But we didn't feel it made any difference between us because they seemed to come back with just about the same message that we got when we went on the proper day. And so we didn't feel it made any difference between us. We noticed another thing, that the spiritual leader of the Hogan family, Rabbi McGovern, he's a neat little fella, but young as we were, we noticed that he constantly forgot to wear a necktie. We noticed that. Whereas the bearded patriarch, who was our spiritual leader, Father Gabursky, we knew he wore a necktie because we'd seen him come along in a stiff wind. However, they were exactly the same kind of guy, and we didn't feel there was any difference between them. We noticed that the Valendis, who lived across the way, were passionately fond of a traditional old New England dish, which they called ravioli. Well, now, we Kaplan boys were just as fond of exactly the same dish, only we called it by its traditional New England name, Krepla. However, it was exactly the same thing, and we didn't feel this made any difference between us. Well, now, things improved with the Kaplan family, and we moved out of Stephen Street into a better neighborhood. And there, the kids were better informed, and those kids smartened us up. They told us that the differences between us on Stephen Street were not tiny and unimportant differences at all. They told us that these differences were big enough and important enough to make it okay for anyone who was different from anyone else to kick them around, to persecute them, and to restrict them. Well, now, if there's any pitch I have in Abner that I'll sneak in any chance I get, it's this. It's to get back to Stephen Street. Thank you for having me.
Al Kapp, an excerpt from his appearance last week at the University of Miami. But the title of that song is Sunday Morning. The group, the Baja Marimba Band. Monitor is quite a group, too, you know, an audience that's nationwide. Serving Central Florida and the heart of the World Citrus Center is WLAK in Lakeland, Florida. A brief station break, time enough for a glass of orange juice, and then we'll come right back. This is Brad Crandall.
Don't go away, there's more to come. More to interest everyone. Just stay tuned, we'll be back soon.